Hello and welcome to Yelling at the Screen. Tonight, the most anticipated film event of 2015. It gave a giant blue glowing middle finger to James Cameron's Avatar with a whopping $2 billion at the box office, and it launched the career of a very promising stormtrooper, T.R. Atar. Joining me today are... Sorry, do you mind if I do that again?
No, yeah, I really do, because I thought that was brilliant. Honestly, I'm just sitting there, just like, wow, awesome. Just keep going, man. Joining us today,
Tonight, Star Wars: The Force Awakens. Joining me today is Jasper Pickering, Robin Elizabeth Moran, and Ben Van Hook.
Well said.
Just a quick warning that this would likely contain spoilers, so yeah, keep in mind for that. So, yeah, Force Awakens, overall opinions. Ben, do you want to get this amazing sci-fi epic review kicked off?
Certainly, because once I give my opinion, we can only go up.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty rubbish, to be honest with you. But that being said, I think all films are rubbish. You know, they don't really hold my attention. I think they're all kind of generic Hollywood, just made for a mass market and not for... I don't know. I just think it's all watered down, kind of rubbish. So within 3 minutes, I was like, this film's not going to be good. So yeah, that's my initial impressions.
Is that just with every film ever?
Do you know what's funny as well, considering you criticised it in the introduction? The only other film that I've seen recently that I liked was Avatar, but not for the story. It was for the visual prowess of it all. I thought it was absolutely stunning bit of cinematography, but the actual story is something, you know, we've all seen 1,000 times. But I thought the opening, like, you got the duh with Star Wars, and then you got the opening line that comes up, the yellow text, we're all looking forward to it.
Yeah.
How rubbish was that? It was written by like an A-level film student. It was like his first draft, and they were like, "Yeah, cool, that's good enough."
Yeah, another thing, because the first line, I remember the very first line was "Luke Skywalker is missing," and I was there just going, "Good start."
And then the final line was, "And we find our heroes here," and it was just like an introduction. It was like a segue into the beginning of the film. I thought it was a bit weak in that sense.
Yeah, how great would it be, like, how our heroes here in space. How great would it be if it said, "And we left our heroes here," and just everybody's floating through space behind the titles. It's like, God damn it.
I think I'll agree with you though, actually. They needed it, yeah, but they could have definitely done a bit of work on it.
Certainly. It could have been better. It also could have been longer. It was really short.
Yeah.
So that kind of like got my suspicions going at first.
I was almost pleasantly surprised with it though. I was just sat in the cinema like,
yeah,
and then it's just like, I've only just started reading it and it's done.
Yeah, well, that's, I was going to interject there. Like, I did feel it felt shorter, and as you said, it just goes, "Luke Skywalker is missing."
Yeah,
and I saw that come on the screen and went, "Okay, that's straight to the point."
Like, good
doesn't
to know.
Really need to go
well
over
done,
any
movie.
Of the gaffers. Like,
well
it's
done.
Been 30 years since we've seen these guys, and one of them's not even there. And that was, I found very, very interesting.
Need to know basics.
Interesting choice for them to do is to make Luke Skywalker the kind of the award at the end, or the MacGuffin, as is commonly known, and I think especially in Star Wars as well. Like, it was in A New Hope, it was R2-D2. Yeah. Now it's Luke Skywalker, the actual hero, the hero of the entire series, and the most well-known character, and he's just not there. Yeah. And I thought that was a very interesting choice, but it also gave room to them to introduce the new cast, which I think we should really talk about a lot more, especially with Daisy Ridley and John Boyega. I thought they gave some very strong performances for very not very well-known actors. I'd like to hear your guys' opinion on the match as well. I think that'd be a good place to go.
I thought they were okay. I thought they were really good.
They worked well together. You know, they had nice chemistry. I just, something about Daisy Ridley. I can't really describe it.
But she was so stiff.
Something about Rey, I just didn't find the main girl. I think this will sound like the weirdest thing to complain about with this, but I know. But why was she British?
No, I thought that as well. Literally, I started watching the film and I was like, ooh, interesting.
Yeah, because like no one else was British. And the thing is, with John Boyega, I can understand that, you know, they want to give him an American accent, but they don't want to give her an American accent. Well, you know, John Boyega's a British actor as well. Have you seen him in interviews? He has that kind of all right, bruv vibe to him. So... to be fair, I can't really imagine it'd be quite a different film if the stormtrooper. I was raised to do one thing, but I got nothing to fight for, bruv. Yeah, in it. I've got to go save the Empire, is it? I'm part of the Alliance, yeah.
No, they definitely, though. I was there thinking, she's been orphaned. Yeah. Why has she got this really, really middle class, very well to do accent? Because I'm sorry, that's not convincing anyone. She's living alone in the desert. And
I thought the British accent was exclusively for the bad guys in the Star Wars franchise.
Yeah, that
pretty much every bad guy in Star Wars, well, not every bad guy in Star Wars, but most of them often associated with the British accent to kind of denote the fact they're evil.
Yeah.
As with most films, like, oh, he's British, he must be evil in the end. And I think I was kind of surprised with Daisy Ridley, considering, like they said, with John Boyega and his American accent. And then, yeah, she's just this British girl who just lives in a desert.
Yeah.
And it's kind of jarring. And there's something my friend pointed out, actually, who was saying at first it, she felt very stiff and it felt very kind of cheesy, the sort of dialogue she was saying.
Yeah.
But then when you really get into the film, you kind of get used to that. You get used to that like Star Wars level of cheesiness, because it is kind of cheesy.
Yeah, that's something I thought as well. Because obviously, I can tell that the main goal of the film was to encapsulate the atmosphere of the original trilogy.
Yeah.
But I feel like when I was watching it, it does it a bit too much. Some it's because obviously when you see it, you rewatch the original trilogy, and I saw them again. Yeah, they're kind of cheesy, kind of 80s, but they're fun films, and their dialogue is a bit iffy. But it's the 80s, you forgive it. Now it feels like they're kind of mimicking it, which isn't really. When you notice it nowadays in high definition with all the technological advances, with a near limitless budget, and your dialogue sounds like a film from the 80s, there is some sort of problem to that.
I think it did read a lot just like someone's published fan fiction. I'm sure J.J. Abrams wrote some fan fiction early in his days for Star Wars, managed to dig that up, and then they just went with that and just thought, yeah, do you know what, this will work.
It was basically Episode 4 Mark 2.
Yeah, yes. It was. It did follow a lot of the plot. Because, I mean, I don't know, just when you think about it, it even had, if you compare, you know, Luke to, how could I forget her name? If you compare, like, Luke to...
Ray? It's Ray.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, okay. That is it. That is
awesome.
It. Thank you. You've won the prize.
Yeah, you've won the prize.
You compare Luke to Ray, the events are exactly the same. They're both on a desert planet. They both don't know who their real parents are. They both find a droid who gives them some sort of item, just mimicking exactly the same thing.
And I know that they were doing that so that everyone would forget about the... about the prequels, and they wanted to get into the original trilogy again and make us feel like we were there and the prequels never happened. But it did feel like they went, well, we need to make sure that this is our basis for the inspiration. And then they got so carried away and so wrapped up in it that they didn't realise they were copying what's already happened.
Yeah, although I guess, to be fair, you can't really please... It's pretty much impossible to please Star Wars fans, let's be honest. So I can see why they did it, because I heard that they only had like 6 weeks. Considering all the hype for this film, we knew about this like years in advance. People only had like 6 weeks to write the script. That's what I've heard. Whether or not that's true, I don't know. But I can understand their pressure. It's like, oh God, what do you do? Well, let's go Star Wars 4. Can we copy off that? Well, the fans like it. Okay, that's fine. We'll just go with that. But yeah, I kind of understand that. Because I think I remember with like pleasing Star Wars fans, there was one person who said, oh, I don't like the new X-Wings. Well, what's changed about them? Oh, their engines are slightly different. Slightly? How do you mean? Oh, it's like they had 4 bits here and now they got 2 bits there and it's all ruined. Okay, you're not going to get very far.
He'll be happy though, because they're doing a Star Wars spin-off, aren't they? They're really maximising it after Disney spent the money and bought the actual...
Yeah, Rogue One. Oh my God, they're spinning off everything. The advertisement is horrendous, because I went into Poundland recently to pick up some dental harps. The only dental harps were available were Star Wars The Force Awakens ones with Kylo Ren on them. I still have orange dental harps, feeling like a Sith Lord when I want to clean my teeth. Yeah. It's like, why?
Well, what's the thing? There was it was a supermarket and they were selling tangerines and they had BB-8 on the packaging for the tangerines. And I was like, I get it. But
cute,
I'm not going to buy a bag of oranges and just see that and go, do you know what? I'm probably going to check
really
this movie out. buying this bag of oranges makes me want to go see the new Star Wars movie. I was going to go see it anyway, but even if I wasn't, that was not going to convince me. Yeah. And I just think advertising's just become a bit too much.
I would love to hear the marketing team. It's like, what would really advertise this film apart from the fact that it's Star Wars, one of the most iconic series of all time, the fact that we've done loads of adverts, loads of YouTube reviews, very hyped for it. What else could we do? I've got it. Dental harps and oranges.
Man, the merchandise they've knocked out is insane. Honestly, about 6 weeks before the actual film got released, it was all in the supermarkets, toy shops, the lot.
It's there somewhere.
Precisely. And that's crazy. The fact that they actually released it, as I said, like 6 weeks prior to the film being released is just nuts. Yeah. And everyone bought it up in a second. My friend spent like a stupid amount of money on a little BB-8 droid, which is pretty cool.
I remember with them like buying posters and all that, like the ones just on campus.
Yeah.
Pretty much all of them were Star Wars The Force Awakens. And I went to my friend's room and he had all these Star Wars Force Awakens posters. And I was there praying. I really hoped that the movie would be terrible. people would have these posters ripped off their room. You made my expectations so high, just lobbing them out the window.
That's probably what they thought when they released The Phantom Menace. Someone was like, oh, do you know what? I'm going to get all the posters for this.
Yeah. All the merchandise, the original script. And everything.
Then weeks after the release, when the initial honeymoon period was over, as was what happened with this film, I think, in a lot of ways, they just went, oh, I've got all these Phantom Menace posters. what a terrible movie, and all this Jar Jar Binks merchandise as well. I've got the dolls, I've got everything, and I'm stuck with it now.
You press him and he makes a noise.
Yeah.
He just keeps him on the shelf every time he walks in, just looking at him. I'm watching you, damn it.
Just as a gentle reminder that you shouldn't buy into the memento hype too early on.
It's a memento. You have like his severed head just hanging above your fireplace. I will learn from this.
It was just so obvious, though, that they're absolutely shameless attempt with all of the merchandising before Christmas. It was like no shame at all. Kind of make me laugh.
Yeah.
They'll probably recoup the amount of money they spent on the film just from merchandise alone.
Oh,
like, that's such a cash cow Star Wars. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, it made $2 billion. It's the highest. It's now the highest grossing movie of all time.
It's not even out of cinemas yet.
Beat Avatar. Right.
You can still go see showings of it. I'm sure it's not as many now. I mean, it's been over a month now since it's been out.
No, it is, and still on like 5 times a day.
Well, that's
I can imagine it's probably going to be on for the next few months. I can imagine they spent so much advertising on this. They put so much effort into the dental harps and oranges. They're going to milk this cash cow until it's dry.
Oh, absolutely. I have absolutely no doubt about that. And it's just going to be another 2 years of that as well, waiting for Episode 8. Obviously, we've got Rogue One coming up next year.
Yeah.
But leading up to Episode 8, we're still going to get the toys. We're still going to get absolutely bombarded with all this Star Wars, frankly, crap merchandise. And I don't know, where does it stop? We're probably going too far away. We're probably talking about too much about the merchandise. Yeah. We'll probably go back to the film.
Yeah.
And as you guys said, you thought it was a bit cheesy. You thought it was maybe formulaic. I initially enjoyed it. I went to see it twice around the Christmas period and absolutely loved it. But I did realise that, yes, it did copy the same formula. And at the same time, I thought, well, I'd much rather have a second Episode 4 than a second Episode 1.
Yeah, and you can tell that they're kind of playing it safe, because, again, Star Wars fans will set their phases to kill, which I know saying that reference is probably enough to make them want to kill me, but still. I still think overall that I understand where they're coming from. I guess I just wish for average filmgoers who aren't, I love Star Wars so much, it's literally my life, that level. I don't know, I just wish for something a bit more unexpected, a bit more original. Because I think the main thing that annoyed me was with the Star Killer Ultra Mega Hyper Mega Kill Everything Base, whatever it's called.
That was the best thing about the movie for me.
Yeah, I find, because I mean, the thing about that is basically, there's still exactly the same trench run.
Death Star Mark II.
And yeah, it's Death Star 3.0.
Yeah, I think they even just sort of acknowledged that anyway. I mean, I know Han Solo, he actually said at one point, he's like, oh, there's always a way to blow these things up.
Yeah.
He's like, well, you just acknowledged
that. There shouldn't be. Yeah, you know, you would have thought that after two attempts, two Death Stars, and this one is like 3 times the size, and it still has the same... In fact, I think this one was easier to blow up.
At the same weak point, though.
at least with the first string, you'd say, okay, so, you know, you're going through the trench, and there's this tiny hole, the size of a womp rat. People went into it, people missed, they fired, it just penetrated on the surface, or whatever that quote was. But, you know, the only reason Luke did it is because he used the Force. So that's understandable. There's a challenge. With this, there was literally a giant thing. I mean, yeah, they had to wait for the shield to come down.
Yeah.
But I felt like they would have prepared it better, because otherwise, ships go in, they blow it up. It had about the level of difficulty to destroy as a boss battle in Mario.
<That's> just, you know where they had to get the shields down?
Yeah.
And I've forgotten what her name is, the... Glitzy stormtrooper.
Oh, Captain Phasma, apparently.
Yeah, I felt that was all far too easy. Just got her at gunpoint and they're sorted. Yeah. I wasn't happy with that.
That is definitely my biggest complaint about the movie, is Captain Phasma. Yeah, she's basically Boba Fett Mark II.
Yeah.
And I feel there's a lot of that in this film, a lot of Mark II for previous entries. Yeah. And that's a problem, because I saw Captain Phasma and pretty much my mind went straight away, oh, that's basically just going to be a new Boba Fett. Looks really cool. Probably get a lot of fan service, but at the same time, won't actually do anything. Will just be a sort of stand-in, get some minimal screen time, barely say anything, and then screw everything up.
Yeah.
As she did in
her
the movie.
Her character was absolutely nothing. It added nothing to the film.
I actually don't know who you're talking about. So. That's how nothing is for me.
The shiny stormtrooper, who her entire job was just this position with the gun.
You know,
I look so menacing.
You know Madonna's silver cone bra?
Yes.
That was it's basically that, but a stormtrooper outfit.
I can't believe I can't remember.
that sounds a lot more appealing when you put it that way.
Well, I've got to see it again. Quick time.
I think all they really did was they took the original stormtrooper outfit, went on Pimp My Ride and then just kitted it out with chrome. Yeah. And that's all it really is. That's, that's all she is. She's just a chrome stormtrooper, but like a mid-level manager, like beneath Kylo Ren, but somehow above a stormtrooper.
Just a stormtrooper in a dead-end job. She's probably just normal. She's like, how do I make this a better job? Okay, I'll make it with chrome. I'll get a cape. I'll get a gun. I can make this work. I'm menacing, guys. Respect me, damn it.
Probably the David Brent of the Star Wars world. Probably the best example I could think of.
Yeah.
Talking about stormtroopers, what did you guys think of the introduction of our hero? What's his name? John Boyega?
John Boyega is the actor, but his character's name is Finn.
Yeah, of course, I should remember
that. I liked
that.
I liked where they came from with that, the fact that he's a stormtrooper questioning morality. That does make it quite different for a character in the Star Wars franchise, or at least as far as I know. I imagine in the expanded universe they have all that stuff, but you know, it's a fresh viewpoint, and I think him and Kylo Ren are kind of the only two really fresh viewpoints. But I think Finn's character is definitely the most, you know, original. They took a concept and actually did something new with it, and I liked him in the film. I really liked the
idea of his character. I thought it was really great. I thought it was just what it needed.
Yeah,
I didn't feel like. And I thought his performance was great, but I didn't feel like his performance was his character. I felt like there was a disconnection between the two.
Yeah.
In the same way that, like, you know, when you watch the old Bond films and they're all suave and sophisticated, and you're like, you're supposed to be an ex-SAS. You're not going to be this polished. I felt in the same way. He had no horrible backstory. He had no issue. He just went from being a stormtrooper and it was like, bam, he's absolutely fine. And I didn't feel that was quite right.
I saw something that apparently they're releasing like sort of comics to explain Finn's backstory as well as some of the other... you know that one stormtrooper who died and then rubbed his blood on his helmet?
Yeah.
Apparently that's one of his deepest friends ever in the comics. And it's like, we shouldn't need to read the comics. Mm. We've seen the film. We've paid you money. You've made $2 billion. Don't give us DLC that we have to buy. Give us the movie.
I would love to see the... a comic book adaptation of Finn's journey, though. I think that would be brilliant because half of it would just be him cleaning out the toilets on Starkiller Base. Because he spent his time in sanitation.
I was raised to do one thing.
And that would be it. That would be amazing. I'd love to see something like that.
I think that would be good. I can imagine that as like an interesting spin-off if they ever run out of ideas. But let's face it, Disney, they're never going to run out of ideas.
I think they're going to go more into that in the next film. I think they're going to be looking a lot more at his backstory. Because there's that bit where they're looking up his details and the hologram pops up of him. Yeah. And they talk about his family. And I think that was their way of introducing for the next film that they're going to talk a bit more about where he's come from.
Yeah, but overall, I think Finn was probably my favourite character in there. Because you could tell that John Boyega was having fun. Because I imagine when you're on Star Wars, all you're going to be thinking throughout the entire thing of acting is, oh yeah, I am on Star Wars. I'm having so much fun with this. So... it was good to see that he had kind of that, almost kind of like a sort of boyish enthusiasm with it, which definitely, you know, made his character a lot more enjoyable.
It's just like I said, just in the same way that like Rey and him basically had the same life to start out with. When you look at it on paper, you go down to basics.
Yeah.
And I just feel like she really brought forward that whole, I've been deserted, I've been left, and still had that like bit of... like almost like a darker past kind of thing.
Yeah.
Something that you could genuinely see that it affected her. And I just was not convinced with how we played it.
They haven't gone into too much detail with her, which is understandable. But the one thing I am really, really hoping for is that they don't... Because obviously we can all agree they've copied off Star Wars 4. Mm-hmm. And we're worried that the next film would copy off Star Wars 5, in which there was the big twist that, you know, Darth Vader was Luke's father. Spoiler alert if you haven't seen it. if you haven't seen it yet, stop listening. But I mean, I'd really hate for it to turn out that Rey is in some way related to Luke Skywalker.
Oh, no, it's definitely going to be.
It's not, guys. They gave the biggest hint at the beginning of the film, Rey is, I think, Han Solo's daughter. Did you not, when they get into Millennium Falcon together and they start
to... I just got confused and then I was like, oh, I must have misunderstood it.
In all honesty, I think another reason I like Finn is because they can say that you go in with a lot of certainty that he doesn't have any connection to the other characters. He's completely new to the situation. With Rey, it feels like, okay, so you evidently have Jedi powers, so there's some link there. But I don't want you to turn out to be, you know, Luke's nephew or Luke's grandniece, because I don't want everybody to be interconnected. Because next thing we'll find out that, like, I don't know, Captain Phasma is Chewbacca's love child or just something... No. I don't know. I don't want everyone to be connected.
I tell you what, when I was at school, some kid was reading Star Wars Episode 7 book, and he told me that it's all about Han Solo's and Princess Leia's children, and they have twins, essentially. So I think that it's Rey and Kylo Ren.
Well, Kylo Ren. That is
a brother and sister,
exactly,
and the parents
same as Luke and Leia.
Exactly that. Well, that kind of follows the formula of Star Wars at the moment. Now, let's keep it safe, guys. Let's keep it safe.
Oh joy.
But if you ever watch that film again, watch it with that in mind, that Han Solo and Rey, father and daughter, and once you see that, because I went into the movie thinking that was going to be the deal anyways, and they were giving loads of little hints, and they had little looks occasionally, be like, oh, you're a tomboy, you know how to fly the Millennium Falcon, and Han's like, oh yeah, awesome, I like this girl. Yeah. So I don't know. Also, how was the Millennium Falcon, when it was found in a scrapyard, able to fly?
Really,
I felt like if they kind of subtly hinted at it, or they gave it, or maybe it was something that Rey aspired to look at, and a sort of one day I will fly kind of thing, but they literally just threw it in there. So she says, oh yeah, the scrub it there. Overdo. Hey, it's the Millennium Falcon. Come on, guys. You love this, don't you? Please, don't kill us.
I actually love the introduction of the Millennium Falcon. I thought that was brilliant, because it was the same as, obviously the same as Episode 4, when Luke sees it for the first time and he just says, what a piece of junk. And it needed to be that again. It needed to be like, yeah, it doesn't look like much, but obviously it's one of the most famous things. And when they actually said, no, we won't take that ship, that's garbage, and they didn't cut to it, and he's like, I just said to myself in the cinema, that's going to be the Millennium Falcon
yeah,
they're looking at.
Sure.
And then they eventually get in it, and everyone goes, ah.
Yeah.
And it was that was the big reveal, and I think that's the reveal it needed. Yeah.
My issue so much wasn't really with the introduction of it. I thought that was absolutely fine, really liked it. I thought it was nice they brought it back. It was that she went, no one's ridden that for years, and it's been in a pile in the desert. Yeah. No one's touched it. It's not going to be running. Like, I was just sat there like, if you leave a car for a week, it doesn't run.
And it would have been robbed. It would have been pillaged. I would take this part, we'll take that part, we'll nick the engine, and it was all just working fine. So.
Shop the Millennium Falcon.
Exactly. So that was one of my criticisms. Another one as well, and I know this person is loved, is BB-8. I don't understand why this robot had like emotions. Yeah. Was like, don't leave me alone, I'm scared. It's like, mate, you're chips and wires. Why do you care? So that annoyed me a little bit.
I loved it.
I thought he was cute. I could just never get past the logic of how that head is logically staying on top of that, like, you know, gyroscopically. But I'm thinking,
Star Wars.
I'm questioning a world where people have like light blades made of laser. And yeah, just
exactly.
Force power.
That
so I think
thing
that's
with
the thing I shouldn't question. I will say this: the one thing about him, the thumbs up with the, you know, the size thing.
That's
I looked at that and I went, you got me, you tiny ball.
Best part of the film when he puts a little lighter up. Yeah, like that.
Yeah. You know what? I will buy those oranges.
That was when
I will buy those oranges.
He is my new favorite character. Something.
I think something I always found this funny with R2-D2 as well, because obviously BB-8 is the new R2-D2. The fact that with C-3PO, I can understand. Would be able to understand him because, you know, he speaks computer language and he is himself a translator. But I remember when BB-8 is sort of just doing the beeps when they first see John Boyega and she's talking to Rey, who instantly knows what he means. Mm. And the fact that he's going, beep, 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 I'd really love one time just to him to go, what's that, BB-8? Little Timmy fell down a well? Beep, 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 beep. Like, how do you understand him?
It's just sort of another one of those languages. Like, I thought that was again supposed to be another little nod to Luke, because obviously he can understand R2-D2, can't he? So
yeah.
I was wondering if that was a little tie in there, another like, yeah, just to let you know.
We're still Star Wars.
Yeah, she's got the Force powers,
Hayden
by the way.
Hayden Christensen is nowhere.
And not just the Force powers, apologies. I keep just wanting to throw my criticism of the film.
Go ahead.
But so you've got the lightsaber, the fact that you've got both Finn and Rey competent with the lightsaber just did my head in. So at first, when he first gets it, Finn, he goes, throw me a weapon, throw me a blaster. And the woman turns around to him and is like, you've got a weapon. And he's referring to the lightsaber. He's like, so he puts it on and he stabs the dude and it's cool, he gets away with it.
Yeah.
But then later on in the final battle with Kylo Ren or whatever, he's putting up a fight. Now this guy's trained with Luke Skywalker, he's been with Jedi school and he knows how to do this stuff. Mr. John's only picked up the sword for however long, and he's fighting the like Sith Overlord or whatever it is, what's the new Sith called? What are they called? New Order or something like that?
Yeah, the new order. First Order.
The First Order, there you go.
It made me feel, I thought it was very Hunger Games.
Yeah, which you know, I kind of understand, because I can imagine Finn would have some experience with fighting, but it does have a bit of disbelief.
He should have been so much more of an intimidating baddie, Kylo Ren.
Yeah, I mean, oh my God, when he took his helmet off.
Worst casting ever.
I laughed. No, it's not. I like the actor. I've seen him in other things. I mean, I know him from the guy who did who was the young guy in While We're Young. If you ever seen, that's all I know him from. But
he's also in Girls, which was on Sky. Yeah. Very good. He's excellent in it.
Yeah, I thought he was. But like I was saying, the one thing that annoyed I know, the main thing about Kylo Ren, when he took off his helmet, I get that they don't want to make him Darth Vader, so they make him kind of different, they make him kind of hasty. I do love that bit when the guy says, oh, sorry, we couldn't catch him, and he just slices up his stuff, and there's two stormtroopers walk by, just like, nope.
Yeah, that was a good scene.
That was pretty funny, but I think the one thing that annoyed me about him, when they took off his helmet, you know, I'm not expecting, like, scarred faces and burnt face like Darth Vader, but you would have thought, you know, maybe short hair so rough, maybe force corruption in his face or something, but he looked... He had long, flowing hair.
And a big nose.
And a big... The nose didn't bother me so much.
bothered me.
The long, flowing hair. Logically, how could you keep all that hair in your helmet?
It'd be difficult.
How could no one notice that? But, I mean, you know, because... Obviously, you know, they want to make him a human, you know, a human character, not just Darth Vader, who's just evil all the time. But, you know, you don't have to make him like Jon Snow got sponsored by Garnier. You know, there's a difference.
I think they were trying to just be really obvious, like, by just so that you, in case no one was keeping up to date, this is Han Solo's son. In case anyone's forgotten.
Oh, God. The way that, I think the way they revealed that as well, they could have been more subtler with that, because all they did was just, they just had Han Solo and Leia just saying, oh, yeah, our son, who is Kylo Ren, wink to the audience.
Also called Ben.
I see what you did there, Ben, Ren, ah. But, you know, just, I don't know, I just think they could have done that subtler. In fact, that could have been an interesting reveal. What if they kept that?
I think they should have kept it right to the end.
And then the bit when Han, you know, they say, bring our son back, in which you're thinking, oh, maybe their son's a stormtrooper, or maybe he's part of the Alliance who's been captured. So speculation. And then when he turns around and he shouts, Ben, and, you know, he turns around and there's like, oh my God, a reveal. That would work. But again, they just basically throw it at your face. Oh, by the way, he's a son. Oh, by the way, this happens. Oh, by the way, there's this. Oh, by the way, yay, bye, Star Wars.
So despite all my criticisms, I really like the film. I felt that it was all very much... I understand that it's necessary and they needed it, but it was very much a, this is the film that is going to be a catch-up film and is going to be the link, the segue into the other films that we're doing. And I don't have an issue with them doing that. Yeah. I think it's quite good, but it didn't all need to be as obvious as it was.
Yeah.
I think it was a necessary component to do that. I think if it was just trying to... just leave behind the old lore, then I think people would have been more critical of that than they are currently at the moment, just saying, oh, it's too similar. I think it's too similar to a great film. That's hard, like,
yeah,
that's as far
really
in terms
complain.
Of criticism. You can't really complain about that. It's more of what people liked about the first one. And it's a bit formulaic, but so Star Wars just is that. And I think I've said before that you could set the whole thing in the Old West, and it would just be a Western instead of a space opera. But we're still keeping the same structure, same characters, same motivations, and it would still feel the same. And I really, despite my criticisms of it, and this was obviously much later when I initially saw it, I thought, wow, okay, that was amazing. That was just what I wanted to see from a Star Wars film. And then weeks later, when people actually took time to mull it over, that's when the criticism started coming out. Right? It was kind of similar, wasn't it? After that initial just period of hysteria when everyone went to go see it and was going, oh my God, this is the best movie ever. And obviously it wasn't, but I think it was as good as it needed to be in order to sort of segue quite nicely into episode 8, which will have to change the formula up a bit and do something slightly different. Otherwise, it's worried of just being a complete rehash.
For sure.
Yeah. I think that they got away with it a little bit as well. There's a bit when Han Solo says, well, it's famously known that history repeats itself.
Yeah.
And so I was almost there like, that's the only reason I'm going to give you this one. It's because I can accept that.
Yeah.
Like you were saying, I think that it's what they needed to do. I think there are things they could have done that would have made it a bit smoother, but it was definitely necessary.
Mm. I also feel it was a setup for the next film as well, and I hope that is good. I heard recently that they've pushed back production by 7 months in order to rewrite the script.
Good.
So they weren't happy with that. So maybe they took on board some of the criticism that people like gave from the first movie. It's like, I'll rejig it a little bit. Maybe not make it as formulaic and as similar to the previous stories. Now to throw in another criticism, this is what I'm doing, just throwing critical bombs left and right.
That's why we're here.
And we're just going to hit them back.
Please do. Yeah. I'm interested to hear what you say about this. Luke Skywalker, where they found him at the end, his location.
But
a little bit cliched.
Something I just think, we should really go into deep detail into Luke Skywalker's role into the film. Okay, we're done. What's next? that's it. All he does is literally just turns around and just goes, huh? And holds out a lightsaber, and then that's and then that's it. He's done.
It was a long walk. He must have been cold up there, Luke. Just standing on the side of the
scene. I was saying about this to my housemate the other day, actually. Yeah. It's like, You see her walk up there. You've got all the panoramic views of the place, and it's like, I didn't see shelter, fire, anything to eat. He's surrounded by sea, so nothing to drink.
Yeah. I mean, even Yoda had a hut.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just like he's just on top of this cliff, just chilling.
I've just been staring out here. I hate this view.
I've been looking at this view for 30 years. You could have got a move on.
That's probably because right at the end, there's that sort of stare that they share. And it just lingers a little bit too long, where they're just really intensely looking at each other. And you obviously know there's some kind of connection, at least. But it's just very odd. And then it sort of just cuts away. And then it's 2 years into the next film. And what I want them to do is just still be staring at each other. And that's how I want them to
do you love that? The whole of episode 8 is them just doing that for half an hour, and Luke just goes, can I help you?
And that would tie quite
nicely. Oh, wait, sorry, I'm not Luke. He's actually up that hill there. Oh, sorry, another hour.
No, but if you remember the beginning of The Force Awakens, when Poe Dameron gets captured by Kylo Ren, and he says, who speaks first? Do I speak first? And he's like, that's exactly how they should open up the next one. Rey should say that, I feel.
Interrogated by Luke Skywalker.
He's like, do I speak first to you? Yeah. I think that would be great.
That ending, I did feel like it was very, like, EastEnders ending. I was waiting for that. It just made me laugh.
Well, annoying thing I found with the fact that he's only in the movie for less than a minute. Mark Hamill is the second name in the credits.
How much did he get paid? I don't know.
I know he was there. I mean, if you look at the credits of the film, this isn't just like Wikipedia. On the actual credits of the film, after
it's Harrison Ford.
Harrison Ford, Mark Hamill, then the others.
Harrison Ford was paid a ridiculous sum, wasn't it?
Yeah, and fair enough, him at the front, because obviously he's still Han Solo. He's going to be the driving force. But Mark Hamill after.
It's just paying respects, isn't it? That's what it is. Respect your elders.
Yeah.
We wouldn't be here unless your performance was as great and the film took off.
Yeah,
so
if you didn't turn around as great as you did. Yeah.
It was massive. Save nothing. Yeah.
Did you see like the curveball they threw, though? Is they actually had like Luke Skywalker or Mark Hamill sitting down in the script reading meetings prior to the production of the film. So they thought, okay, he's actually got lines here. He's going to be a part of this, and didn't even have a word.
Yeah, he's just looking at the script and just stage instructions.
Looking for his line.
Turn around.
They were there like, someone's ill today, so we need you to stand in, considering you do nothing else.
Indeed.
I would have loved if he had one line and he did it in his voice of the Joker. That would have been fantastic.
Mix it up, crossing between
worlds. I mean, aside from that, you know, the rest of the ending, I think the final fight, I quite liked that. I thought that was quite a decent a climactic fight. Although I think that's probably as climactic as it probably ever got.
He should have beaten them up really bad, and they should have been crazy intimidated by him, and then she'd have to go away and refine her skills with Luke and come back and give him a challenge. The fact that it was a competitive fight, I thought, was ridiculous.
No, it was absolute nonsense.
I think what's interesting about that, because Kylo Ren was wounded at the time from he got shot, they only kept hitting himself.
I did look at that the first time. I was like, what are you doing?
Yeah, it was. I looked at some like analysis and people were saying
he's
it's
punching
to
his
make
wounds
himself,
to get him angry,
to get him angry so he could use the force. Like
He was stabbing himself with his sword, was he?
He was punching his wound.
He got an injury when Chewie shot him, and then he's just kind of hitting it to. Chewie. Just whilst we're on Chewie, you know, obviously I love Chewie. Everyone loves Chewbacca, but you would have thought he would have looked a bit different after 20 years. I don't know.
It's only different you can look when
I don't know what the Wookiee aging process is like, but it's been 30 years, maybe a grey hair.
I was expecting sort of like, you know how dogs, when they get old, they get a bit of a beard, like the white beard. Yeah. And I was expecting something
just
at least
Chewie
like
with
that.
A great beard.
That would have been cool.
Just combing it. That would be fantastic. But I think with the fight, wasn't there a bit where... I know that he has his injury. Wasn't there a bit when Rey starts to fight back, does he get his hand cut off, or he gets something?
That's another Star Wars film.
He gets a scar on his face,
which was going to be a thought.
All I could think, the only thing I could think of throughout the entire fight was Monty Python, Holy Grail's Black Knight. I don't know why. I just looked at it. He just cut across his face. Just the flesh wound. Look, I've cut your hand off. Come on then, you pansy. That's all I could think of about the entire thing. Yeah.
Again, just keep not being convinced. It's like they had a good idea and then they just got too carried away with it and forgot how that it wasn't at all realistic. As realistic as Star Wars can get, but it just kept bringing me out. I'd feel more and more immersed and then I'd be bought out again, and that was quite jarring.
What did you guys think of the new... What was it called again? First Order. The First Order Overlord.
The First Order... Oh, Emperor Snoke, or whatever he's called. Which is the name of my... I like to think of it as that's a name of one of my GCSE physics teachers.
Oh, yeah. It's Emperor.
Emperor Snoke. He just pulls back and it's him with his ponytail.
Detention, boy!
Remember me? No. But no, I think he has...
I feel
ominous bad guy with a large holoprojection.
He's Darth Sidious.
I was expecting some kind of Wizard of Oz reveal. You go behind the curtain, he's actually just like 2 foot tall.
This tiny
little alien. He's like, no, look at the screen, look at the screen.
No. Fine, I think that would work. I remember me and my, because I saw this with my family, my brother, who did say either we can't really tell either if he's really giant or if that's just a hologram. And he just loved the idea that he's just like, he's basically Yoda, like a tiny Yoda, Yoda level Yoda. Sort of thing.
I think, because he was played by...
Andy Serkis,
yeah. That's it. And he was played by Andy Serkis, and I think he let slip that Emperor Snoke is 7 feet tall.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know, I was kind of hoping for the little man with a Napoleon complex. I was really, really hoping that was going to be a thing because I thought that'd be brilliant. He has to have this huge hologram because he's such a, got a massive body image problem with himself, which I just think, that he needs to be a huge,
compensating
giant,
for something.
Yeah, absolutely. Can't be compensating for his tiny size.
Yeah.
But that's a shame. Oh, well.
Just segueing into the Yoda bit, did everyone like our new Yoda?
she was functional. She was there.
I quite liked her.
I feel like she has more. I feel like she in the later film she's probably gonna have more of an impact. And she's just kind of, ooh, I'm ominous. How did I get this lightsaber? How did she get that lightsaber?
That's we're gonna find out.
No, that's the thing. That's from, because that's the blue one for when Luke got his hand chopped off in Cloud City, which probably fell, and probably like him, fell down the chute into the clouds. I mean, what happened to his green one?
The green one, I assume he kept with him to the temple, possibly used at the academy. But that blue one was also Anakin Skywalker's lightsaber when he killed the younglings with it.
So
it was like,
bit of a mixed reception there.
Yeah, when Obi-Wan Kenobi gives it to Luke Skywalker for the first time, this was your father's lightsaber. You killed 10 children with it.
And he was a good friend.
Yeah.
He was very mean, but he was a good friend.
But no, I thought she was really funny. I quite liked it. That opening line, and she's like, "Where's my boyfriend?"
Where's my husband?
I think Chewie definitely got a much better role than in previous films. For someone who doesn't really say anything, and people kind of speak for him, he's like, "What's that, Chewie?" As he said, "Little Timmy fell down the well." And but I think he definitely had a lot of development, and I was pretty heartbroken. I was more heartbroken at Chewbacca's reaction to spoiler Han Solo's death. Then,
yeah, oh my god, how could you say that?
Than Princess Leia was.
She couldn't care less.
She just seemed, she was kind of a bit upset for about one frame, and then you kind of cut to Chewie with the same reaction, and I was really genuinely upset by that.
Yeah.
And you could tell her, it was like, if I was Chewie, I would have wanted to kill Kylo.
I would feel so sad, and he does it with... No, I'm just thinking, because he shot him with that gun, which I'm thinking, okay, he clearly had that gun in the original trilogy. Han Solo and him have been together for at least 30 years, and that's just from the original trilogy to the new one. That, you know, they've probably been together before that for like a few years or so, and he's never tried that gun. That's all I'm saying.
I thought it was definitely overused.
It was kind of...
You'd probably give it a go. I mean, it was still kind of entertaining when it happened, but, you know, when he sort of said, wow, this thing is really good, that was quite entertaining, but there was a part of you that'd go, really? You're not a bit curious about they haven't tried that?
Yeah, I was like with those two. I just found it a bit funny. Obviously, we don't know what's happened to Chewie's family, do we? It's like it's hinted at.
Well, have you seen the Star Wars holiday special?
The holiday special.
No,
pretty.
Do not see the holiday.
I've heard about the holiday special.
This is all I would like to say, and then we'll move back to Force Awakens about this. But it's basic. You know, George Lucas is the kind of guy who doesn't like to go back on his decisions. He'll usually just say, "Oh yeah, because I want this and I want to do that." He genuinely quoted about the Star Wars Holiday Special, "If I had time and a sledgehammer, I would find every copy of the Star Wars Holiday Special and destroy it."
If he'd known where the Star Wars, where Star Wars was going, he said he would have never ever made it.
Well, I think now anyway, he would have said he never made it because it was awful. But anyway,
that's over the internet. You can find it anywhere. I think it might even be on YouTube.
Well, that'd be amazing.
And it's something like 40 minutes long, and it was just a TV special, which itself is not great, and they managed to somehow get Harrison Ford involved and Mark Hamill.
It's not animated.
Some of it's animated, and that's when they first introduced Boba Fett. Apparently, it's just the most bizarre Star Wars related thing, and it's actually canon because of the involvement of the original cast.
Oh,
but I'm sure George Lucas would definitely want to retcon that, but the internet never forgets something like that.
Yeah, it's you're over, George. Yeah, put down the sledgehammer and run. Anyway, back to let's
move away from the
holiday
special.
Try to forget about that. Yeah.
I'm watching it tonight, to be honest with you. Just what I'm going home and doing.
You're welcome.
It did feel very much like it was like lads on tour. They've both got their wives back home, and just how Han Solo, he knows that he has met, like, that him and Leia, they have this son who's messed up big time, and Luke knows that something's gone really wrong.
Yeah.
And all of the guys just went, oh, nah, I'm out of it.
Yeah,
and then when they all come back, Leia could not care less. I was thinking, if my mum was there and she'd just seen my dad after, I'm thinking like at least 10, like minimum 10 years, after that big a mess up, she would be furious. She's not going to be welcoming him with open arms. He's going to have to make up for something big.
Yeah. Has Carrie Fisher acted since the last Star Wars movie?
I don't.
Bits and pieces. I remember her in the Blues Brothers.
I don't think I saw her or anything. I've seen her on things like QI, where both me and my mum agree she didn't look the best. Because understandably, you know, she had some problems with addiction. She suffered from bipolar disorder, and you know, I think she held up quite well in this film. You know, she got her act together, and I thought she was passable. But a lot of people have really ripped into her, which I think is.
I think that's totally unfair.
I thought she was all right.
Yeah,
I never realised how tiny she is.
Or maybe just how tall everyone else is.
Yeah.
Like, how tall is Harrison Ford? Jesus.
She is absolutely brilliant, though, as a person. I don't know if any of you follow her on Twitter or anything like that, but you absolutely should. She is hilarious.
I've seen some
She
of
has
her
got
interviews.
The best sense of humour. It's the kind of person you would. If she was my aunt, you would just, every Christmas, would just instantly descend into awkwardness. Just from the amount of crazy stuff she says. Especially about, like, her addiction and stuff. She's very, very open about that, which I think is great. I think, you know, she has to be. But, yeah, I think she's just such a great person. And I never realised before this film, because obviously she was a bit under the radar and hasn't really done too much acting. Does it, like, a cameo here and there. But now this is sort of her sort of chance to shine again, is like the older women, like Meryl Streep style.
Yeah.
It's like gracefully age, I feel.
Yeah.
And I hope she gets a lot bigger role actually in episode 8 and 9 subsequently. But
yeah. Yeah. What do you think of like Han Solo and Luke Skywalker and all these, you know, I mean, Harrison Ford and Mark Hamill? I mean, they look like Harrison Ford looks like he's still holding up quite well. I mean, we know that he's probably one of the most highest paid actors
ever.
He's been in like everything, even nowadays. I think the latest thing, he was in like Cowboys and Aliens, and then 42, and then I don't know, something with Liam Hemsworth, and then so he's still going strong. Mark Hamill has basically just been the Joker very well. He's done the Joker very, very well.
In what?
Voice acting, maybe.
Pretty much every animated thing ever. Every Batman cartoon, every video game, the Arkham series, he was the voice of the Joker.
Okay.
Basically everything that wasn't Heath Ledger or Jared Leto.
Wow.
Yeah, knowledge. People do actually sort of cite him as one of the best Jokers.
Yeah.
Like, next to Heath Ledger, obviously saying, like, he's a very menacing character, which is funny when you consider he plays Luke Skywalker.
Yeah. Do you reckon that's why they didn't give him any lines in the film? Because now he has the Joker voice now.
Typecast.
He just becomes a mute.
That's all he has. So it's like, if we give him a line, he's going to sound like the Joker. We'll just have him look in the distance, do it dramatically, we'll be fine.
No, I thought Han Solo was probably one of the, for me anyways, one of the most redeeming features of the film. I thought it was really good, thought nice nostalgia. I didn't really like what they had done with Chewbacca, as I felt they turned him into like the comic foil, whereas before he didn't have much emotions or anything like that, and now he's going like, and like doing like little faces. And stuff. Exactly.
Aww.
A
just
little bit Scooby-Doo-y. What was the Galaxy of the Universe Marvel film? You know what I'm talking about?
Guardians of the Galaxy.
Thank you very much.
They're making Groot.
Exactly that. I thought he was a little bit Grootish.
Yeah.
And, no, I can see that.
I was a little bit, oh, where's Chewie gone? I just like my hardcore Wookiee.
Yeah.
Now he's just banging out jokes.
It's that bit when he's there rolling around with his arm, isn't it?
Yeah, just a few. There's a few.
You must let the Wookiee win. She's like, oh, come on, he's a big boy. You could beat him.
Also, as well, I really liked the nostalgia part when they were on the Millennium Falcon, when the old school chess ball came out, and they hadn't messed with the graphics at all there. And that was cool. It was a nice little reference there.
And then Chewie was so excited because he loves that game. Yeah.
How do you play that game? I don't understand how you play that game. It looks like that game of chess that Sheldon tried to make in Big Bang Theory. It was like 3 levels high and it's impossible to play.
Battle chess. It was amazing. I used to play it as a kid. It was kind of like a similar type of thing. Instead of like pawns and kings or whatever, they would take on a certain... Anyways, you move a thing and they'd like rip its head off or something crazy like that. It was chess, but with monsters. So I'm going to go around Noss. What was your favourite scene of the film?
Favourite scene of the film? That is a very tough one. I would have to say, actually, thinking about it in terms of being... in terms of the scope of the set piece, the when they first fly the Millennium Falcon through the like wreckage of the old Star Destroyer, I thought that was incredibly cool. And you'd not really seen the Millennium Falcon do what the Millennium Falcon was doing, and that's obviously because it's a different pilot and obviously updated special effects, but I just thought that was such a interesting way, the way it was shot, the way they laid everything out, the way it was, the whole choreography of it, I just thought was pretty superb, and I was getting very pumped for it. Obviously, if it, said before, the first time you see the Millennium Falcon in like 30 years, and it's awesome. So that would probably be my favourite bit, I guess, from it.
Yeah, no, I think that would have to be mine as well. It was the first time they fly the Millennium Falcon, when the first time Rey and Han Solo fly the Millennium Falcon. The only other scene I think I could rival with it is the scene where, you know, Rey's alone in the desert and she's going, she's just walking and walking out to the, is it an old walker she's in?
Yeah, it's some sort of... some sort of thing.
Anyway, when she's walking out there, just because it is so beautiful, the filming is and the scenes and things are just so stunning. Yeah, I like that bit too.
Yeah, awesome. The cinematography in certain scenes was fantastic. And Boss Man.
Right. I actually think my favourite scene, this might sound very, very strange, but I think my problem was that like in the first bit of the film up until this point felt a bit too, you know, too Star Wars-y, yay, we're going on a little adventure, yay sort of thing. And I think my favourite scene was the bit when the Starkiller base like blew up 5 planets. I think that's at the moment when you realise, okay, these guys are like proper baddies now. That was the moment that really engaged me in the film. But I don't know, maybe I just need death and genocide in a movie. Thanks, Game of Thrones, you've made me a masochist.
I like the way that at the same time, again, when they did it in Alderaan in A New Hope, Princess Leia's like her home planet's been destroyed and billions of people have just died, and she's sort of like being all snarky about it. And then it was just everyone kind of looked a bit like shocked, and then just the stormtroopers came and there was no mulling over. It was like, wow, 5 planets just blew up in front of us. That's insane.
That's kill.
Well, we you guys doubled up with your favorite scenes. And yeah, you and I have two. that's my favorite scene.
Yay!
When the Death Star times 4, whatever it is, just blows up like 5 planets like that. It was visually, just once again, I was just like, wow, that blew me away. I thought that was rather stunning. Yeah. What do you think of Kylo Ren's lightsaber?
This was one thing. I remember the first time I saw that, I genuinely had an idea of how they could have made that really cool and really practical. Because with the tiny hilt on that idea, my idea was that was a tiny detachable lightsaber, which with the Force he could have used to detach and like spin like a bus and lob it like that. And I thought that'd be so practical and awesome. But no, it kind of looks like a giant... It's meant to be sort of a greatsword sort of thing, which is supposed to show... I think the reason for it's supposed to sort of hint at the fact that he's still in training, the fact that he's quite immature in that sense. So, you know, when you join the dark side, you think, yeah, I'm going to be so big and evil. I want a giant sword. Okay, what else do you want? I want a giant ringed sword that has a lightsaber hilt. Yeah, because I'm evil. Well, how is it practical? It just looks evil.
Would anyone like a bit of trivia on that?
I think we're probably going to
say
the same thing.
We've probably got the same point. you can go.
Do tell.
Okay, I'll go. I don't know if you guys noticed this, but the Kylo Ren's lightsaber was a lot more unstable than Luke Skywalker's
lightsaber. Yes, I did.
Yeah, it had sort
of the hilt bit, I thought it was like, that's kind of impractical because you're restricting your movement. But the reason it exists is because they're powered by crystals. Lightsabers, and it was so unstable, much like Kylo Ren, it was sort of an embodiment of his character, that it had to have two vents on the side to let out all the excess energy, otherwise it would overheat, which is the reason why it was. And I thought that was the aesthetic, and when they first revealed the lightsaber, I thought that was like, oh, that's how lightsabers look now. But that's just his, because instability of his thing, which is why Luke Skywalker is just this solid blue beam. And then, obviously, compared to Kylo Ren, which is just crackling away with actual sparks flying off it, and I just thought, That's genius. That's brilliant.
Yeah,
that's
brilliant.
Really clever.
I really liked that. I thought that was really, really clever and a subtle hint as well.
That's very clever. I still prefer my tiny lightsaber love it with the Force thing, but
it works as well.
When you look at it as well, you can see that there are like wires and things on it. He's made it himself and it's done a shoddy job.
Yeah,
that's very crude.
Look what I made.
But yeah, I kind of thought my idea was that that was just a little aesthetic to make the red lightsabers look a bit more, you know, different from the blue lightsabers. So I, to be fair, you haven't seen another red lightsaber, so I can't really say that. I can't really back that up. But that, I think that'd be quite a cool thing if, you know, the blue and green lightsabers are very, you know, they're smooth. They have a lot of flow to them, whereas the red lightsabers are just evil, crackling lightning. I think that would have been a nice little aesthetic. Well,
that was the first lightsaber not to have the same shape as all other lightsabers. I definitely thought it was cool. I like the way it was crackling and not just a solid shape, but the knowledge you guys just gave me is brilliant.
It brings
it's a
lot
to, yeah, exactly.
A lot to it when you know that, yeah.
Makes it much cooler.
That, and I thought that's very, very cool. Yeah. What do you think about... Obviously, this is probably going a bit more into the future, but Rey's lightsaber, what that's going to be, because she'll obviously have to have her own one.
Yeah.
And people were saying, and I like this idea, is the Darth Maul style double-ended, as in with her star.
That would make perfect sense.
Yeah.
That actually would work. Although, I always thought the Darth Maul staff, don't get me wrong, it looks really cool, but when you think about it, it's really impractical. Because the whole point of the bow staff, you're supposed to hold it at different edges and you can block it like there. But the fact that you have to hold it there the entire time, hold it dead in the middle, I don't know. I see that kind of diminishes the point of having it like that. I can imagine Darth Maul probably chopped his hand off like five times.
Burnt his fingertips a couple of times, got the wrong end of it.
Ow.
Yeah. I don't know. I still think it's potentially the coolest lightsaber ever in Star Wars.
It's still cool, but when you break it down, it's impractical. But then again, it is Star Wars. That's kind of everything. Wow. I think what would have been cool is that rather than that, if you can like break that lightsaber apart to come into two separate if you needed to, and then you can just put it back together in one and have a merger together. That should be Rey's lightsaber.
I don't know if anyone
just like a
involved.
Swiss Army lightsaber.
If anyone involved with Episode 8 is listening to this, then I don't know. We've got some great ideas.
I will pass it on to them.
Yeah,
please. I think you really do. I love the idea of Rey having a double-ended blue lightsaber or green or whatever, just a hero version of Darth Maul's.
I was thinking purple. We haven't had purple for a while.
Purple, very true, huh? Goodness.
Or we haven't had ones like, I think even in things like Star Wars The Clone Wars, I think there was even a black lightsaber.
Wow.
That was a thing. In one of the Star Wars Clone Wars episodes, that was a thing. And I think someone had yellow. Pretty sure there's a yellow or an orange, or maybe that was just a video game. But how many colours do you choose the colours?
You make your own lightsaber, don't you?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I suppose you do have an input. Mace Windu was purple.
I think it's on the colour, dependent on the colour of the crystal, because the crystal is what controls the energy. So in my head, that makes sense, is that it flows through this crystal and the crystal's red and then it's red.
I think something that I would like to see in Star Wars Episode 8 or 9 is basically how a lightsaber is made, basically. Because we've seen it in things like the Clone Wars, and it's kind of been said, oh, it's powered by a crystal, but we've never seen it in a film, this is how you make a lightsaber. I just feel that might give a bit more insight, because the whole purple lightsaber thing, I don't know.
That's got an interesting story behind it, actually.
Yeah, it's just Samuel L. Jackson just wanted a purple lightsaber
because he was a bit hesitant about doing it, and then George Lucas said, well, if I give you your own coloured lightsaber,
would you do
it? He
was
like, oh, I get my own lightsaber. That's really cool. And I think that is actually why Samuel Jackson took the part, was because he was told, he's like, you get a cool lightsaber and no one else can have it.
Do you reckon that's what, like, Mark Hamill is still in this film? I don't want to do another Star Wars. We'll give you a new lightsaber. Yay!
That's probably it, yeah.
Yeah. I'd forgotten about this earlier, but did anyone notice how when Rey goes and finds Luke, he's up on the cliff and he's now turned into Obi-Wan?
In the sense that he's got a beard.
He just turns around and I'm like, oh my God, it's Obi-Wan. He's back.
That was my first thought as well, actually.
I thought they'd resurrected him and I was like, oh no, wait, it is just Luke. We're all good.
Yeah. It would be funny if they managed to get Sir Alec Guinness back in the role, despite the fact that he's no longer with us.
Recreate him with CGI.
Yeah, and apparently they did actually use some of his audio.
Actually, that was I found this out. They used Ewan McGregor, actually, who was him in the prequels.
Also Yoda as well was in it. It was in the mad bit. Was it Kylo Ren has some mad flashback or something? It all went balmy, and it was during
when Rey touched the lightsaber.
Yeah,
is that what it is? Is it Rey?
I think that was it. Yeah,
it was during that whole montage, is when they put the splice in all the old stuff from the older Star Wars movies as well.
Yeah, because I heard it was a mix of Ewan McGregor and Alec Guinness together, and they used old audio clips and managed to somehow make it sort of sound pretty sick, like the same guy.
Yeah, I think that's
just clever.
Yeah, I think that's a nice little tip to do.
I think we've done pretty well, guys.
Yeah,
huh?
I think we've done a very good job. Right, so should we
How do you want to wrap this up?
Yeah, well, let's just wrap this up. All right, well, thank you for listening. This has been Yelling at the Screen. I've been Tom Chukas. Special thanks to Jasper Pickering, Robin Elizabeth Moran, and Ben Van Hook.
Pleasure, guys.
Right, see you next time.
Indeed, indeed. And I just want to say something as well. It's been a pleasure working with you guys. I think we all contributed very well, especially yourselves. And look forward to doing more.
Yeah, it's been a pleasure, guys. Yeah,
certainly. Congratulations to us all.
Right. Wow. May the force be with you.
Indeed.
May the force be with you.
We kept that flowing. To be honest, we're still recording now. But
oh, my ears feel free.
Yeah, I know, indeed. Huh? Okay. There wasn't too many pregnant pauses, anything like that. Not real major.